tape identification. This is an oral history interview, the second interview with former Wellington City Councillor Ruth Gottlieb at her residence in Strathmore. It's Wednesday the 8th of April 2015. It's a wet, cloudy day outside, just a light breeze blowing. In our first interview, we discussed Ruth's life and how she came to be in New Zealand and became a councillor. For this second interview, we're going to be concentrating on her work as a city councillor from the early 1980s, I believe. So Ruth, over to you. Where would you like to start? When you first became a city councillor, what were one of the first things that that struck you?
Well, one of the first things of interest that comes to mind, Gabor, is the first town planning hearing that I sat on. We were three councillors, and it was about a little house in Levy Street in Mount Victoria, where all the houses are single frontage houses. And this young lady came to us with her architect, and she told us that she had bought this house and loved it 2 or 3 years previously. During the first 12 months, she was robbed and raped in the house. And she now came to us because she wanted another room, a bedroom that had been designed to be in the roof of the house. And to cut a long story short, this other room took some light and sun from the neighbor. I was most upset. I wanted her to have her other room. I did not want the neighbor disadvantaged. I went home. I asked to abstain, to give me time. And the next morning, my husband said, "Ruth, I hope you make up your mind today so we both get some sleep tonight," because I didn't sleep all night, tossed and turned. "What can we do?" The next morning I went to the mayor of the day and I said, "Please, I want to abstain from voting. I cannot vote on this." "You are not allowed to abstain from voting, Ruth Gottlieb. You're a councillor. If I were to allow that, it would make it far too easy for you all to sit on the fence." And I could see how right the mayor was. At that time, I had to vote against this young lady. At that time, we had an architect's department. I took myself straight up to the architects. I gave them this plan. I said, "Can't you plan something that will not affect the neighbor and she can have another room?" Happy ending. Mm-hmm. 3 or 4 months later, the architect approached me. "You will be very happy." Well, ending, yeah. Because they designed something that did not affect the neighbor and she got her other room. So yeah. I was very happy. But I just mentioned that because that was the very first one that I sat.
And it was obviously quite a minor issue, but obviously a very human issue.
Very much so, because had the original gone ahead, then the neighbor would have been disadvantaged by not having sunshine. Now, what else can I tell you?
What were some of the more public issues, things which were a little bit controversial?
Well, a very important public issue that went on for years is the sewerage. We had so many proposals put to us. Finally, we were really contemplating to choose this English scheme of millie screening. I'm not going to go into it all because it's far too technical.
Now, of course, at this point, Wellington City, we were essentially just pumping our sewerage untreated into Cook Strait.
We had no sewerage system for a capital city. My goodness, you are quite right. It's exactly what was happening. And the big issue for me was, should we accept millie screening, or should we do something that was even better than millie screening?
So millie screening was essentially just sieving the sewage, would that be correct? Taking out the solids?
Oh, and well, it was much more than that.
Right.
And there are certain types of grades of millie screening. It's a very technical subject that I still probably don't understand from A to Z, but I certainly educated myself in that arena for a long time and fought desperately not to have the millie screening at Moa Point, only because it was near residence. Finally, I voted for it, I have to admit. Why? Because the suppliers swore to me, gave me such assurance that where it was in England, oh, you've no idea what they showed me, and I'm only speaking personally, as proof. We were the whole council, of course. Proof positive that where it was, no odour ever escaped. And it was one of the times when foolishly Ruth believed them. Mind you, it is a very, very good sewerage system. There have been very few complaints, but there should never have been cause for any one complaint. However, we got our sewerage system. John Blinko and I fought.
He was another councillor, was he?
He was a councillor. And he, I can recall there's even a photo in my scrapbooks of me bashing John Blinko with balloons at the launching of the beginning of the whole scheme at Moa Point, because he said to me, I want you to go swimming in it.
And what was his objection to how did your views differ?
John wanted the more expensive type, which, as I say, at first so did I. But you've no idea the extra millions. Mm-hmm.
Now, these were very big ticket items, weren't they? They're
oh, yes. And I just didn't know where they were coming from. We were going to get, basically, where we were going to get the money from. And having had such assurance that what we were deciding on was actually operating and doing well, one can only believe what one hears or what one reads. I can't say I do anymore, but that's all that we as counselors could go on. We only ever got God information given to us by officers who had gone into everything far more even than we did, and they came to us and would give us information. Mind you, Gabor, it was always a common knowledge thing to say that officers only told counselors what they wanted them to know. However, I became very chary as time went on, and I delved very deeply into most of the challenges that came before us.
Now, something that you mentioned earlier, just when I first came in, you mentioned how you had a role in the saving of the Nairn Street Colonial Cottage.
Yes.
Now part of the Museums Trust, but it's a very old house, and I believe at one point, I think it was under threat of demolition, is that right?
Well, it was either going to be demolished or moved, because it is certainly one of the worst sighted points of interest, because it is a wonderful house for people to see where the first settlers in New Zealand went. And there you will see all the implements used in the kitchen that was used at the turn of the century, virtually. I certainly took a great interest in Nairn Street Cottage and did for a time think, well, perhaps it could be moved, but it would have to be moved what I call holus bolus. Nothing changed. And where would it be moved to? And if it was moved, would it not lose the fact that this was where it was sited? However, as I say, for people to get there, you need to be a mountain goat, because it's up an enormous hill. But I wanted the children of today to know what it was like at the turn of the century. Like today, a batch of scones is, you put on a kitchen whiz and you pop it in a microwave in 10 minutes. But I wanted them to have, I wanted to get, first of all, a wood-burning stove, which we didn't have at Nairn Street Cottage. And so we put an advertisement in the paper. I begged the MED, that was our municipal electricity department of the day, if they would give a new stove as a swap or exchange or as a gift to somebody who had a wood burning. Well, you go try and find somebody with a wood burning stove, even though this was quite years ago. Wasn't easy, but in the country, one of the officers found one. We got it. We had our wood burning stove. Then I needed a butter churn, because I wanted children to see not just a pound of butter, that you have to up the cream. And the milk department got me a butter churn. Got the butter churn, had the wood burning stove, got them to deliver cream every time a teacher from one of the schools took a class of children to Nairn Street Cottage, where they baked scones or whatever, pikelets, but they had to light the wood stove, and, you know, do everything as it was done. And I called it a day in the life of great-grandma. It was very successful. I don't think they still run it, but I am a life member of Main Street Cottage, which I'm very proud to be.
Now, another building that you mentioned, which similarly had also been under threat of demolition, was is the St. James Theatre. Perhaps you could tell me a wee bit about that and your involvement with saving that building.
Oh, I will. But what a heartbreak this was for me. I was at the St. James. It was owned by the Chase Corporation. Owned it. They were offering it to the city council for $1. But no free lunches. They were putting up a building in the CBD, Central Business District, and they wanted another floor, I think it was. Extra space.
So this was a sort of a planning decision that they were after to go into their favour.
Yes, yeah. Yes, like in a way, well, not similar, but the arts bonus scheme that I chaired for some years. But this was, they were giving the St. James to us and $7 million to upgrade it. But for that, they were getting extra space in a building that they were about to erect in the city. And I walked out of the St. James with the mayor of the day, and I said, "You've got to accept it." He said, "I don't think I can. I would love to, but it's election year in a few months, and save our city." His name, Ron England.
So that was a lobby group, was it?
It was a lobby group. Save Our City have said to me they will make sure I'm not the mayor if I accept this offer, was more or less what the mayor said to me. Oh, I said, "Look, we must have the St. James." Well, again, I can tell you, shortly after that, Chase Corporation went bankrupt. We would have had $7 million. And we had to buy the St. James from the Chase Corporation. I can't recall the millions, but to me, I think it was about $12 million. And we had to pay for the, because the $7 million that they were going to give us was for strengthening it. And we all said, that was a big heartbreak for me, having begged to take. I said, "I'll make sure that they, you know, that you were the mayor, and never mind the threats." Sometimes, Gabor, you have to make decisions even though they might be unpopular with certain sections of the community, but you have to show a certain strength, I suppose. But this, I've always thought every time I go to the St. James, of the ratepayers' money that had to be spent that needn't have been spent. But c'est la vie. C'est la vie.
What about I know this is something that I recall in my good many years ago now, was the discussions around the casino. Now, Wellington, I know, is the only sort of major municipal centre in New Zealand that has no casino. But I do recall around the time that the gambling legislation was being amended, that it seemed like it was almost going to be a certainty that we were going to have a casino in Wellington. Tell me a bit about your experiences, surrounding this issue.
Oh, I wanted a casino in Wellington. I still do. I even suggested that the St. James could have been used for a casino. Oh, how awful of me, because the St. James is just wonderful as a art venue. But I wanted a casino because to me it would give another dimension to Wellington. We don't have manufacturing anymore in Wellington. We are an event city. Please don't tell me about the terrible ills of gambling, because of course anything to excess is no good, but there will always be those who take things to excess. But the majority, the vast majority, go into a casino. They are entertained. They have very much less expensive meals, usually, because a casino wants to draw people in. And for the most part, a family can go and enjoy what's on offer, have $20 to bet on the slot machines, and then go home with sometimes $21 in their pocket and sometimes less $20. But that's what the average person in the street does at a casino.
And so was this a fraught issue within council? Were the councillors were their sides, strong sides, taken in this? And how did we end up not having a casino? How did that come about?
Well, like everything else, you can do nothing on your own in a council or on any board. You have to lobby people to vote your way, and the vote simply went against it. All the good hearts, everybody is entitled to their opinion. Now they really are. They would shoot me down in flames around the table when I said more or less what I have just said to you, but I genuinely, firmly believe that. I really do. Have to touch on the Youth Council.
All right. Sure, let's do that now.
Just
tell me about the Youth Council. Now, as my understanding, the Youth Council is a kind of an advisory group, aren't they, to advise the council on issues specific to youth and teenagers, chaired by young, very capable and I don't know how you'd describe them. They're certainly a very clever bunch of people. My experience with them has been very positive. What was your involvement with the Youth Council?
It was my baby.
It was your baby.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sue Kedgley was a wonderful support to me in that. And we fought, I really did, to get it established. I wanted school children in their second to last or last year of school, teenagers, of course, first year university students, young boys and girls of the city, to come to council They to me were our future counsellors. And I attended every meeting, every month that they had. And they were brilliant. They were brilliant because they would disagree with each other in such a friendly, wonderful way. I had such a good time with that youth council, and it's still going, and I am so pleased. The only things that came before them were things pertaining to young people, our youth. Gabor, I have always said that our youth are magnificent. They are much maligned by the odd dropout, but for the most part, our young people contribute well. They go about their studies, they're respectful. If they working, they do it in a good manner. I think our young people are a magnificent group and such an asset to the community, but they are much maligned because I do hear in many places, you talk, oh, young people today, no respect, no this. And I really get on my high horse, and when I finished, well, sometimes I might have convinced some people how wonderful our young people are.
Did you think the Youth Council had an impact? I mean, certainly you were listening to what they were saying. Were other councillors taking them seriously? Did they have an impact on other councillors and the way that the council sort of voted and these sorts of issues that were brought to the table by them?
The impact that they had, that they made, was what was discussed at the Youth Council was brought to the committees, the relevant committees of whatever item was discussed. The items were brought by the officers because they were the ones that would weed out what was relevant to young people, to the youth, or where the young people wanted an input, even if it wasn't an actual item that they were involved with. If you can understand what I mean. But and then it was all minuted. We had an officer at the table, and the decision, well, yes, they were decisions, but they were never official. They couldn't be because these were not elected people. But it was all brought back that the Youth Council said ABC, and it was acted upon, or it was not acted upon, as the case may be, depending on the vote. You always had to depend on the vote.
Now, something which I certainly recall from my teenage years in the mid-1980s was the waterfront car race. I think it was originally the Nissan Mobil 500.
Yes.
Now I know you mentioned in our first interview that you weren't particularly interested in sport, yet I believe that you were a very great supporter of the car race and how it came about. Perhaps tell us some information about that.
It was brilliant for the city. No, I wouldn't know a racing car from a truck. Although, I can't remember his name, but he was one of the famous drivers of the day that came. Did take me round the track in the racing car.
At high speed.
At high speed. And I loved it. Scared stiff. But I loved it. But we had so many against it. Councillors would come to the table and say, my neighbour said that the noise is absolutely terrible. My argument was always, 1 weekend in 52, is that too much to ask our people of the city who might be affected by the noise to be a little lenient because of what it did for the city. Do you realize that when we have an event like this, and I would go and mix with all the hundreds of them that would be in the town hall and watching, and they, the hairdressers, the taxis, the hotels, the restaurants, all the service industries did so well. Their tills were going, and the retailers as well, but even more the service industries of the city made a lot of money. It brought money, it brought people to Wellington, and we are such a piddly populated city with such fabulous talent, of course, but there was so many against it. Not only the noise, and I have to say this, it did a lot of damage to the roads. And that was costly to maintain. But for some years, it was the Nissan or whoever was running it that paid for that maintenance so that the ratepayer didn't. We did have expenses. It did cost. You get nothing without either effort or money. And so consequently, the ones who wanted it were worn down. And because of that, I think it went to Christchurch. Another city took it over for a year or two.
And then it sort of gradually just faded away, didn't it?
Yeah. It faded away, yes. No more international car races in New Zealand that I'm aware of for some years. But it was wonderful while they lasted, and it did a lot for the city.
What else would you like to discuss? What have you got on your list?
Tiaro Park.
Ah, Tiaro Park, formerly Pigeon Park for us older Wellingtonians.
Formerly Pigeon Park. Mm. Well,
a very controversial issue, and we're in the early 1990s, wasn't it?
When the decision
was made to redevelop
right.
That park. Yes.
But Richard Nansen certainly was the officer who worked very, very hard with me and with the artist Shona Rapira Davies, who came to us with the design as you see it now.
Was it a competition type process? Did the council go out to? Can you recall? Did we go out for various proposals to be submitted?
That's a good question, because we used to run a lot of those. I can't remember if it was a competition or not. But if it was, Shona Rapira Davies was the final winner of the contract.
The design, yes.
Of the contract. And she submitted a price and a design. And she was hand-making the tiles. And we agreed to the price. And the timing, but I'm afraid the timing went on like we were given a time frame, and the date came and there was no Tiaro Park, nothing even.
Nothing even started.
Yes, it was dug up ready, but nothing. And this went, the delay was becoming a bit intolerable, because Richard Nansen had several visits to her studio and would come back and say, yes, she is hand making the tiles. Well, if the tiles had been made by machine, it wouldn't have made a tap of difference. But her price went up and up and up and up. And when we said, this is just, we must call a halt, she said, well, I'll stop working and you've got a half of a TRO park. She held us over a barrel and was, I hate to say this about anybody, but about this whole transaction, she was dishonest, because we had no choice but to meet her excessive amount, and I really can't recall the exact figure now, but it would be all in the books. But it was humongously larger than was first proposed for this, what was supposed to be wonderful. And that we had an eyesore at Arrow Park for so long, I'm sure you remember that, until finally, and I can recall we argued desperately with her, and I was quoted somewhere in the paper of saying how displeased I was. And I went to visit because I knew she was working there with her son. And when I approached her, I said, Shona, I am very disappointed. And she hit me in the arm, slapped my face. Yes, she did. And said, you don't like me. And that was very, very hurtful to me. So Arrow Park has very sad, bad memories for me. And I was involved with it from the start to the finish. And even today, I consider that it is not what was really intended, because the tiles are slippery in the wet weather. The water, it costs a lot of money to maintain. But can I tell you this? Thanks to my efforts, it didn't cost the ratepayer a penny. I approached Chase Corporation.
Or Fletcher's.
Ron Trotter of Fletcher's. It wasn't Chase, it was somebody else. Two corporates. Ron Trotter was so good to me. Now, I'll rephrase that. Ron Trotter was so good to the city because he financed the Henry Moore when I wanted a Henry Moore. And this certainly was, they came to the party. And there was a brass plaque in the front of Arrow Park, sort of not far from where the toilets are, but it's not there anymore.
Which mentioned the contribution.
The corporates who, because I was always worried about ratepayers' money that didn't need to be spent, even though spending ratepayers' money on art is a wonderful thing. A city without art is a dead one.
were there discussions among the councillors? Did it get to the point where people were just talking about simply ripping up the contract? And did it ever get to that stage?
Oh, it did, almost. And we turned around and said, it's even going to cost us more. It's going to cost, look what we've spent already. We've got nothing for it. The prices have gone up, 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 and we've got a blot on the city, an eyesore. We were held over a barrel. What could we do? If we cancelled on her, oh no, it was just not possible. It was just, we had to go ahead with it. Oh, tail between our legs, virtually. Awful. Terrible. Instead of it being something that you had great pleasure in seeing it come to life, no. No pleasure at all.
One area which I'd like to touch on is an area which has been very controversial with the public, and it's something that's happened off and on over the years, and that's the various arguments and decisions around the council divesting itself of assets and selling them off. And there's a number of things come to mind. It's the airport, Capital Power, even if you go back far enough, I think the Municipal Milk Department. Perhaps you could talk about your memories of those sorts of decisions and the sorts of controversial issues that were discussed.
Well, I have to say, as far as the airport was concerned, and I live very close to it, so it's part of me, I was totally against, and I voted against, selling 2/3 of the airport. I wanted us to keep it all. But I was wrong, because having really studied all the pros and the cons, what was to be gained, what was to be lost, and what could be lost and could be gained, and what not only financially but for the city as a whole, for the ratepayer. And I truly was of the final opinion that it would be a good thing to sell 2/3, because we had a lot we wanted to do with the monies that we got for the 2/3 at that particular time, believe me. And we would use the bonuses or the dividends, whatever you care to call them, monies coming in every year and still is, very nicely, thank you, coming in. While I have tremendous faith in council and everything that we did, and our staff, even when I think of City Works, and there are some things that can be better done outside and privately, or even as a partnership, public-private partnerships, because we and I, any local authority, and I say this without fear of contradiction, there is so much duplication. Oh my goodness. The waste of ratepayers' money, of health money, through duplication is horrendous. It really is. And so, as far as the airport was concerned, back to the airport, I finally gave my absolute approval to sell 2/3, and I stand by that today, because it was a good decision. We are still gaining because the airport is doing very nicely, thank you. And I hate to admit this, but I'm not sure it would be doing as well were it still fully in council's hands.
And Infratil, of course, brought a lot of investment to the airport. I mean, there was the new terminal that was constructed, and more recently, the new international departure lounge.
The Rock.
The Rock.
Which is gorgeous. It's good. It's a credit to our local young architects. It really is. Yes, wonderful.
Anything else on your list that you would like to touch on?
Have we mentioned the Henry Moore sculpture? We have.
No, only very briefly you touched on it, and that's the importance of having public art.
Mm. Oh, very important. Our artists are the lifeblood of a city. Absolutely. And as I've said, while we're a very small, piddly populated city, we have world-class talent in both the performing and the visual arts and medicine. And I'm going to touch on medicine too, and the new hospital.
But the Henry Moore sculpture, now that was another, if I recall correctly, wasn't that a sort of a trade between Fletchers and the city? They were seeking permission to do something?
Fletchers wanted the city to have a Henry Moore virtually. It's the only Henry Moore we have. And
did they want anything in return for that?
No, I don't think they did. I don't think I'm wrong. Fletchers didn't want anything for that. That Henry Moore was a standalone. It was a gift from Fletchers. And they were solely responsible for the Henry Moore. Now, I could be corrected on this, Gabor, but this is the way I recall it, because I know I said to Ron Trotter, "You darling," he was one of my pin-up boys, and I said, "Oh, I'm just so thrilled to be having a Henry Moore." And in the middle of the city, I want it to diminish in size because all the people have stroked it. He said, "Well, it's only there because I can see it from my office window." But, of course, it got moved from there. Why? Because of vandals. And that's such a shame, the few rotten vandals of the city. It was costing us so much maintenance to have to get rid of all the graffiti that was placed on it, that finally even I had to more or less agree. Now it's obscure in the Botanic Gardens, but I still want the Henry Moore to be not in the Botanic Garden.
You'd prefer it in a place where more people
of
would
course,
be aware of it.
Mm. Of course. I mean, it's a thing of great beauty, and it's a wonderful thing to have a piece of work by such a famous sculptor. Absolutely.
You mentioned health. That's the Capital Coast District Health Board, is that correct?
Capital and Coast,
yes.
District
so
Health Board.
So after you decided to retire from the City Council, but am I correct, you stayed on the Health Board at that time?
I wasn't on the Health
you
Board.
You weren't on the Health
no.
Board at that point?
No, but somebody said to me, "Ruth, for God's sake, the Health Board's an hell of a mess. Why don't you become on the board?" Now, that was a stupid thing to say to me, because the Health Board was not in a terrible mess. But I'm just telling you what was said to me. Anyway, I did put my name down for the Health Board. In fact, in the 30 years that I've been in local government, I've never not been re-elected. Now, that to me is a great credit to the people of Wellington. Why do I adore them? They're wonderful. Yes, so I put my name down and I was there for three trienniums. I was. And I can truly say that I concentrated on cancer, on getting linear accelerators that is used to give radiation to cancer. Now, over the years, I still do far more voluntary work, but I've always taken cancer patients for their treatment. And I've been aware that the odd time I would take a patient and the receptionist would say, oh, I'm sorry, I have to give you another appointment. The accelerator is broken down. Of course, it was past its use-by date. And so I would fight on the board, and I would say, this is not a cost, this is an investment in people. And wasn't only me, of course, it was getting people and the board. Why, in my tenure, I got three new linear accelerators to replace the three that were long past their use-by date, and now they don't break down. And for that, I'm very, very proud.
Now, these would have been very expensive items, wouldn't they?
$5 million. Absolutely. A lot of money. And you know, somebody sitting opposite you on the health board wants that $5 million for the children. Somebody further down wants it for the mentally sick. And I can't blame them. I also wanted to tell you about the loan that was given to us by the government. The supposed loan, well, it was given. The people of Wellington think that we were given, and I mean G-I-V-E-N, given, $300 million to build the new hospital. That's a myth. And I want to dispel it immediately, because our health dollars are being eaten up by having to pay the interest on this enormous loan, which is a vast amount of money every year. But people don't know that. We will never be in the black. Not while this loan is over our heads. And that's why, unfortunately, at every board meeting, the CEO is asked to cut down, to save, to make you know,
to reduce costs. And
yes. Thank you. To reduce costs. And that's terrible. But I want all the people of Wellington to know that. I really do.
The decision as to where the new hospital was to be built, were you part of that decision? Or had that already been?
Indeed I was.
Because the big debate was it going to be rebuilt,
yes,
in Wellington, or was it going to be moved to Kenepuru?
If we were really clever, we would have insisted that it went to Porirua, because that's the central, if you like, of, and that's where it should have been. But the doctors tabooed it, would not, under any circumstances. And so we simply had to build the hospital, or rebuild the hospital.
On the site, on its original
from
site.
From the site. And another interesting thing was the hydrotherapy pool that had to be moved from the hospital. Though I said, not on your Nelly, it's a new one and it's perfect. Till I went to have a look, and the hospital at that stage was like Topsy, a little bit built here and a little bit built around had to be moved. But we promised, we gave our word that there would be a hydrotherapy pool in Wellington and the people would not have to go to Pararua for it. Well, the CEO decided, no, we're not going to keep that word. And so Ruth Gottlieb went with all the protesters with a board in the street outside the hospital protesting that we gave, and I said, we gave our word. How can you give your word for something and renege on it? We have a hydrotherapy pool at the Wellington Regional Aquatic Centre. We do indeed.
Mm. And so we that do. Was a sort of a partnership arrangement, was it, between the health board and the Wellington City Council?
Yes, absolutely. And it's wonderful and it's working so well. I still see the odd time the people that I protested with, you know, and they say, yes, thank you. And did I ever tell you, deviating, Te Papa?
Ah, now Te Papa.
Te Papa?
No,
I resigned from Te Papa because of the condom encased Virgin Mary.
So you were on the board at Te Papa? No.
I resigned. When I say resign, I'm sorry, I didn't resign. Sorry. Yes, I did. I was a friend of Te Papa, of course, and I wrote and said, I'm resigning. You resign if you, or I'm giving up my membership because of this, because I thought it was an insult to have it on display. I really did, whether it was or not.